Hi everyone, I'm Joanna, and this is Hyphenated, the podcast about living in the hyphen, and today I have a really special guest with me. Jasmine Romero was my co-writer on the podcast Princess of South Beach, which we will be talking about at length today. She's also the head of development at Sonoro, which is a Latino-focused podcasting company. But before that, she worked at Gimlet and Endeavor Audio, and she's just a podcast genius. And she's a very, very good friend of mine. And today we want to talk about storytelling and podcasting. Jasmine, oh my God, welcome.
Hello, baby. I'm so excited to be here. Also, I would not call myself a podcast genius. I do very much like podcasts, but I still feel like I'm in the learning phase. I'm still absorbing all of the podcast wisdom.
But I do feel that you're someone that's had, in the few years you've been on this earth, a long career in the world of podcasts. I feel like you almost dove in right when podcasts were exploding.
Yeah, for sure. And I've worn like every different hat that there is in the world of podcasts. So I started out at Gimlet as like the babiest of baby producers, like cutting the tape and cutting out ums and putting the whole thing together, and was there, became a producer, started lead producing shows, editing, writing, doing every different job in podcasting. So I've definitely like had my hands in the weeds, so to speak.
But you came to New York to be an actor.
I did.
And you're actually on Sesame Street, which not a lot of people know. My husband Daniel was like, wait, she's on Sesame Street? So you always wanted to be in storytelling, but you were a performer first, and then podcasting sort of became a viable like way to tell stories, or did it just accidentally happen?
Well, I think like my entire career has really been defined by, you know, my relationship with Latinidad, because I think as an actor, and you've felt this also, you know, you go out there and you never see the roles that are right for you as a person, right? It's always like the sexy Latina or like the maid or whatever. I was really focused on musical theater, and particularly in musical theater, there's like three roles that are for Latinas. There's like West Side Story, there's In the Heights, and there's a couple of like roles that are sprinkled throughout, but unless you're like a really, really strong dancer, like, or unless the casting director is like looking to cast ethnic, there's not a whole lot out there for you. And so I think both in acting and then now in podcasting, my focus has always been on like, how do I get more roles for Latinos, both like in front of the camera and behind the camera, in front of the mic and behind the mic. And so now I'm working for Sonoro, which is this company that's like solely focused on that. And I feel like it's really given me a sense of purpose and the kind of work that I really want to be doing, because I just want to like make more stuff for the next me that's out there and wants to see themselves in the world.
Wait, so tell me, and I sound like a white guy called Brad asking someone quote unquote ethnic where they're really from, but what is your background? What is your Latinidad?
You know, it's really funny. When I was bartending in between gigs, guys would come up and be like, oh, you're so ethnic looking. Where are you from?
Which, Jasmine, no one's ever said that to me.
Are you really?
The bartender at the bar I was at yesterday was like, are you? I'm going to take a guess here. Irish? And I was like, no, absolutely not. And he's like, you have to have some Irish in you. And I'm like, I literally have a 23 in me. Not 1% Irish.
Not
he's
a
like,
drop.
There's no way. And I'm like, no, I'm from Venezuela. And he started laughing. So, you know, what type of ethnic are you, Jess?
Well, my whole family, for as long as we know, is from El Salvador. And I was the first person born in the U.S. All of my sisters, I have three older sisters, they were all born in El Salvador.
El Salvador. So for you, you got here. You're like, I want to be an actor. I want to be on Broadway. Oh my God, I feel like this is really almost impossible. I want to be a storyteller. Okay, let's do this audio thing. And now I, you know, as I've sort of been doing Hyphenated and listening to other podcasts in Spanish, I've noticed that podcasts for the Latino community and in Latin America, it's sort of like a few steps behind. I remember I was doing the cover of Hola Magazine, which was with a bunch of other podcasters, and the makeup artists were like, what is a podcast? Where do I buy it? You know what I mean? Like, I was like, wait, ¿cómo no van a saber? But there is this lag right now, I feel. Do you see that?
100%. And it's crazy because when I got into podcasting, I felt like I was getting into it late. And with the Latino podcast and Spanish podcast, like, it really is, we're right at the beginning. And, you know, I one of the biggest problems for Latinos getting into podcasts is that they don't think that there are podcasts for them. And I completely recognize that feeling, because that's how I got into podcasting. Is I, you know, like 6 years ago or whatever, when I first got into podcasting, I had never listened to a podcast before. Never. I just assumed it was like Joe Rogan and This American Life, and that's all there is.
Honestly, that sounds pretty accurate for like the first 10 years I listened to podcasts.
And I was like, I'm not interested. That's not for me.
Literally Ira Glass and freaking Joe Rogan, which is like, Joe Rogan, get out of here. Absolutely not.
If I want to hear white men yelling at each other, I'll just open the Wall Street Journal and like be done with it. And so, I had always dismissed it as this, like, art form that didn't have anything to do with me. And I grew up in South Central LA. So I, you know, like, in the 90s, grew up listening to hip hop. And I was on Spotify one day, and I got a push notification for this show called Mogul, which is a show about this hip hop mogul, this manager who, at the peak of his career in his 40s, commits suicide. And the podcast is trying to figure out, like, what happened in his life to get him there. And it had all these interviews with, like, people in hip hop, and I just immediately gravitated towards those voices because they were authentic and I recognized them and they sounded like people that I grew up with. And I was like, oh my God, maybe this is a different kind of storytelling for me to get into. And so that's when I started working at Gimlet and I completely fell in love with the art form. But the entire time I've worked in podcasting, it's always like, okay, but where are the Latino stories? Where are the stories for us? And the pool is super limited. I mean, in the US, you've got Futuro Media, which is run by Maria Hinojosa, which is very similar in style to like This American Life. Radio Ambulante, which is similar also, but does that in Spanish. I mean, the pool of, we all know each other. All the Latino podcasters know each other because there's like 10 of us. And so I'm just really focused on like what's next for us.
So how we met, I think, is very interesting because we met in a casting room where you were basically helping the director cast her short film. But I forget that that's how we met because it is so different than what we ended up doing. You know, we were in a room where you were ostensibly basically a casting director and I was an actor. And what we ended up becoming was friends through writing.
Friends?
But our friendship really blossomed through work because right as the pandemic was beginning, you called me and you were like, Joanna, I want to write an audio telenovela. And immediately I was like, that is a brilliant idea. But I had a hesitation because I felt that telenovelas represented a different type of Latino that wasn't me anymore. Like, I thought telenovelas were my grandma's generation, basically. And even though I watched a few growing up, it was always a point of me feeling very insecure about my Latinidad because I just never liked them. And I just felt that that meant that I wasn't really Latina. And I also felt that in Caracas, as a kid, the only way basically for me to get into the entertainment industry was basically through telenovelas. Like, that was it. That was the art form that was being created there. Therefore, in order to be in entertainment, that's what I had to do. So when you asked me that, I was like, oh my God, are we going? I thought we had circumvented this. I thought we had avoided the whole telenovela thing. But it felt very empowering because when you told me, let's write this, it was like, wait, we get to write it. That means we change all of the tropes or make fun of the tropes. That means that we can bring storytelling, that type of storytelling, into our generation. And I think that was the funnest part of writing Princess of South Beach during a pandemic while we were miles apart, writing these characters, making fun of the stereotypes, pointing to the tropes, was sort of like taking ownership of something I had previously felt contentious over.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was really inspired by stuff like Knives Out, which takes this very classic formula of the detective murder mystery and does something new with it and makes it modern. The last thing I wanted to do was to make the same telenovela that we've seen a million times. You know what I mean? Like, that's not the point. The point is to take this art form that we really love, I really love, that I grew up watching, and fix a lot of the traditional problems that you've seen with it, right? Like, you look at the telenovelas that we grew up watching, they're super fun. The reason why they're really engaging is because it's like, it's melodrama and the stakes are so high and the characters are crazy. But it's also like, the male characters are super machista. There's never LGBTQ representation. There's never Afro-Latino representation. The females are always like, oh, someone help me, someone save me. And like, the maid is always like, there's always a maid, and it's this throwaway character, and her entire purpose is just to, like, you know, have chisme go back and forth. And I wanted to take all of those tropes and do something fun and interesting and different with them, and like pay homage to this art form that I love, but also fix a lot of the problems that I saw with it. The other thing that's interesting about telenovelas is, like, everybody loves telenovelas. Americans love telenovelas. They just don't know that that's what they're watching. You look at Gossip Girl. Gossip Girl's a telenovela. Like, whether or not you know it, you're watching a telenovela. The NFL.
Grey's Anatomy, right?
Grey's
Did
Anatomy.
Did you just say the NFL?
Yes, honey. The NFL. The drama between these players.
No.
Yes. No. Es una telenovela. Don't even
football?
Start.
Football? American football?
American football. Oh, also wrestling?
Oh,
WWE?
That, yes. Eso sí.
Sí.
Eso sí te lo doy. WWE is testosterone telenovela. That's probably why I don't love it. And it's because of all the testosterone. But the telenovela aspect, I do appreciate. The drama, the characters, the playing up. I always feel that telenovelas is sort of like this amping up of the realities of life to a point of it being saturated. It's like saturating relationships and drama and violence, and it's life, but like way more intense.
But that's why it's such a great escape, because like, how bad can my problems be if Ruby's husband just fell down the stairs and her mother just had a heart attack and she's gonna lose the inheritance and all of this just happened in one episode? It's like everything that could possibly happen to a human being happens all at the same time in a telenovela. And so it really helps you, like, forget about what's going on in your life.
It was really challenging, to be honest with you, Jasmine, to write this, because as a writer and as a comedic writer, usually the stories I have written or the sketches I've written are very contained, right? So I'll write a sketch about the Venezuelan birthday song being too long. That is great. That's one concept. You hit the concept a few times in a short period of time, and then you're out. Or you write a pilot. Okay, you follow one character that is going to be kind of your main character, and there's a beginning, middle, and end, and then you sort of wrap up. Writing this telenovela was freaking just, it was so challenging to keep every storyline in check.
Yeah.
I started thinking, like, how did these writers do this? You know what I mean? With like hundreds and hundreds of episodes. Because we did 38 episodes?
36. It's 36 in each language. So the episodes are done in English and in Spanish and released every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it's going to be 36 total, but technically 72.
Oh, my God.
God bless
me.
Oh,
my God.
God bless you.
I think we were in, like, episode 30. And I was just like, I remember writing it. And I remember I was in it. By episode 30, I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. What's going to happen to Estrella? I'd forget it was up to us. Like, oh, well, we got to figure it out. That's why we're meeting. Oh, right. Yeah. But I think that was really challenging, was changing that sort of that gear shift where you have to be holding all of these sort of narrative points in the air at the same time. You're juggling them. But simultaneously, you want the characters to be believable in the unbelievableness of a telenovela.
Yeah, you still have to motivate their choices. We both knew where we wanted all the characters to go and to end up. And it was, how do we get them to that place? And that it was really challenging, especially across so many episodes. So like, to have enough things happen to them along the way so that the journey doesn't get boring. But also, it's so many intersecting things. Like, if we changed one little thing about one character, it would change everything for the next 8 episodes for all the other characters.
Yeah, man. That was a lot.
It was rough.
I can't even keep my sock drawer organized. And I don't know how my brain was able to follow your brain in keeping all of these storylines in check. But I think another challenge that I really appreciated writing una telenovela was that we started out writing it in Spanish, and then we switched gears and we wrote it in English, and then we wrote it in both. And I realized how different it is to write in the two languages. I think that nothing has distilled the differences in writing in English versus in Spanish than this experience, because it was taking, not verbatim, but almost verbatim from one language to another. And some episodes started out in Spanish and others in English. And what I noticed, and I don't know if you agree with me, is for the Spanish, it felt so much easier to sort of fall into the tone of a telenovela, right? The drama, the melodrama. And in English, it was so much easier to have the irony and the sarcasm and sort of the self-awareness that it was a telenovela. In other words, one was very much like the original telenovela sort of spirit, and the other one was like the postmodern, pointing to the ironies and the tropes that we like making fun of. And I think what we were trying to do was create a telenovela that was self-aware. But listening to both, it's like, of course, the language of origin, right, of the telenovela is going to sound more like a telenovela. But the other one, I've never heard una telenovela in English. Maybe Jane the Virgin is one, but it's harder to fall into it completely when it's in English. I feel like my brain goes like, wait, what am I listening to? Like, I think it feels like a completely different genre that I haven't heard of before.
Yeah, I think what was tricky about this is that we were writing a comedy, and telenovelas are not normally comedies. Like, very few can I think of that are taking the storyline seriously but are also a comedy. And I think when you translate the words of a Spanish telenovela into English, it sounds redonkulous. Like, the dialogue sounds so insane. Because the melodrama is just so heightened, and like in English, we don't have that style, that it just doesn't exist in media. And so I think as we were writing it, we were really careful to keep the comedic tone in mind and also to try and write dialogue in English that sounded natural and believable that people would speak. But naturally, just because of the way that the telenovela is structured, I think some of the lines like come off a little more sarcastic or ironic, or I guess like in that comedic tone of like making fun of itself and being self-aware. And it's one of the things that I told you as we were writing it. I was like, I think people in Spanish that listen to the show in Spanish will understand it because we have this shared language of telenovelas. And I think English audiences are not going to be used to this style, but I think once they understand what's going on, they're going to be hooked. And I think that's what we've seen so far. We're only a third of the way through, and so far people are really just loving the show, which has been really exciting to see.
There's some weird fan fiction out there.
There is some hilariously filthy fan fiction that I can neither endorse nor condemn. But I'm excited. The fans are so excited that they're writing filthy fan fiction.
But what I love about a lot of the fan fiction I'm reading is that it's not about the archetypal heteronormative relationship. A lot of people are really attaching themselves to the LGBTQ+ relationships. And those are the ones that are
resonating
with people. And I think it's because we haven't seen that very often in Latin American or Latino media. Bueno, we have Casa de las Flores, and there's more and more coming out that are and are tackling it. And I think it's in great part because people of our generation are now in the writers' rooms and show running and all of this. But I remember we were a little scared. I was a little scared to do it justice in the way that we wanted to, because we didn't want to just put in characters that were not just straight, beautiful women and men. We wanted to show the variety of people in Latinidad. And I think that making it a podcast makes it easier. So we were able to cast, both in English and in Spanish, a really diverse cast of people, even within the same family. They don't have to look alike.
Right.
Gina Torres is an Afro-Latina woman, and her daughter is Rachel Zegler. And like, maybe if I saw that somewhere, I'd be like, I don't know if I believe it. But when you hear it, it doesn't matter. And I feel like it's opened up the ability to just cast based off talent. Creating the diversity we wanted was so easy and seamless to do it.
Ex Mayo, who plays Estrella, is Mexican, and she's a Black woman, and she said to us, like, she had never gotten to do a role where she was Latina before. No one ever thinks of her that way. And Gina Torres said almost the exact same thing, and she's been in this business for over 20 years, I think. And Gina never gets to play Cuban, you know what I mean? She said she's gone into casting rooms, and the casting director has said to her, like, oh, you know, this is how a Cuban would talk. And she's like, actually, I don't think so, because I'm Cuban. And you know what I mean? It's crazy.
But it's kind of like what we talked about earlier. I feel very self-conscious about my Latinidad at times. I think people are surprised to hear that, because so much of my career has hinged on me very much embracing my identity and creating content for people with my identity or that are interested in understanding my identity. And I think we all feel this bizarre inseguridad,
yeah,
around Latinidad, because it's such an amorphous concept. And I was scared many a time to write stories that I felt were Latino, because I felt like maybe I wasn't the right person to do it. And fuck that.
Yeah.
Fuck that noise. I think all of us represent something, and you and I have completely different experiences with our identity. Like, I've never been to El Salvador. I have never been. I'm sure it's gorgeous. You grew up in West Coast and also Texas. Your Spanish is spectacular. I don't know how.
Thank you so much.
And you walk around the world with people assuming that you're something, right? Like, you're not fully here. You're not fully maybe American.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. My parents came to the U.S. in the 80s, leaving the civil war that was happening in El Salvador. I've been back to El Salvador many, many, many times. And I think for me, there's no way for me to walk through the world without people knowing where my family is from. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot hide my Latinidad. But even with that, even with wearing it on my skin and on my face, like, there's always this feeling of, like, I grew up in LA, and I remember being in elementary school and the kids making fun of me because my Spanish wasn't good enough, you know what I mean? Because I had an accent when I would speak Spanish, and so I would come home and feel ashamed about it, and my mom would be like, no, your Spanish is fine, you are 100% Latina, like, do not ever let anybody make you feel less. And but it's definitely a challenge growing up in the United States, because you're neither from here nor from there. You know what I mean? You're not American enough to be American, and you're not Latina enough to be Latina. And I think, like, we gravitate so much to these pieces of media that make us feel represented. I remember watching Selena and seeing her say, like, me siento muy excited. And I was like, yes, that's me. That's how I feel. I remember being in high school and meeting Latinos that were, like, into metal. And I was like, is that a thing that Latinos do? And it's like, yes, we're allowed to like whatever we like. And I think, like, media puts us into this bucket of, like, oh, you all like mariachi, right? Like, oh, you're Latino, you want a piñata at your birthday. And it's like, which, no, like, we...
That might be true. I do want a piñata.
I had a piñata at my wedding, but that's not the point. But that's why we're making what we're making, right? Mm-hmm. Is because we need to have the breadth of everything that we are represented. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not Anita in West Side Story. I'm nerdy and dorky and... I'm, like, way more Zooey Deschanel than I am anything else, but I've never seen that kind of Latina represented. And I think you and I are both working towards trying to create more roles for other women like us so that we can have the full breadth of what we are in the media.
You know, when we were writing Princess of South Beach, I remember we were writing an episode and we forgot to check in with one of our male characters. And I realized that we were spending so much time on the female characters, and we didn't set out. We didn't say the female characters are going to be the strong ones and then the weaker ones are going to be the... We never said... We just wrote a story and characters we liked and resonated with. And what happened? The females in this story are so lit.
They drive the story 100%.
They're complicated. They can be mean. They can be sweet. They're torn up inside about something. And... I felt bad at one point because I'm like, oh my God, we forgot about the men a little bit. We got to go back. And, like, because, you know, I think I got so excited because I was like, oh my God, I'd love to receive this script and dig my teeth into this as a performer. And so many times as a female, that's not necessarily the case in a lot of the scripts that I receive and a lot of sides I receive. And having writers that represent different points of view is so important, because it was so unintentional to write strong female characters. It wasn't intentional. It was just what came out of us as women and Latina women. And as performers, I think.
Yeah. I think that's the big difference between having 98% of the scripts in Hollywood written by white men and having, you know, different perspectives on the other side of the table that are shepherding these projects, right? It's like, if you have never experienced life in any other shoes, you know what I mean? Like, it's so hard to have authentic and real people on the page if all of the people that are writing it have had the exact same experience in life. You know, there's mm-hmm. there's a monologue later in the show in an episode that hasn't come out yet about one of the characters being bi. And it's something that I wrote from the bottom of my heart because it's an experience that I have. And it's about this like erasure that this character feels. And that is, I know a lot of people in the queer community that feel that way. And I think if I didn't have that experience, I don't think that I could write that authentically. Do you know what I mean? From a place that feels honest and truthful. And the other thing is, like, when even at the executive level, when every time I've worked in a company and the entire executive board of the company is all white men, it's like it's really hard to make diversity not only of skin tones but of perspectives a priority when it's not something that's coming from inside of you, where you don't feel the need for it from yourself. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Because we wrote this together and it was very easy, because although we have a very different experience with Latinidad, we share that duality and that, you know, biculturalism very strongly. But, you know, in my writer's room where I'm at now, I'm really thankful that my showrunner was like, yeah, let's have this be half Latino. Let's have this be a half Latino a writer's room. And it's really remarkable how we get pitches for stories from the Latino writers that we would just not have received from the other ones. And the other writers are remarkable. They're great. They're brilliant. But there's some really interesting storylines that I wouldn't have thought of that really represent the culture in a way that doesn't feel forced, that doesn't feel like, and in this episode, there's going to be a large sombrero because it represents culture. No, it was like, it's like personal, intimate stories. And even writing a cartoon, which I am doing right now, the best stories are the ones that are linked to real life, or at least the emotion is linked to something you felt. The easiest story I wrote on that show is about an abuela that I based off my grandma. And that actually Jenny voices. And it's bizarre, it's wacky, but it's an abuela that I hadn't seen before, because it's an abuela that is literally my grandmother. And it represents Latino culture in a way that feels real, because it's real, even though it's a freaking cartoon. And I think we brought a lot of ourselves writing this telenovela, even though it's crazy, it's wacky, it's about twins. There's so many storylines that wouldn't happen to us in real life. You know, the characters and relationships and the love interests, like, all of that is based on stuff we've felt.
That is the joy of this show, is I've never seen a telenovela where one of the characters goes to therapy. Never. That is not a thing that Latinos do.
Jasmine, I had not even realized that. I had not realized that.
When have you ever seen that? Never. And this character is talking about issues with her self-esteem and her self-image, and like it's all these conversations with where this woman is dealing with like very real issues, and obviously it's a comedy, and so it, you know, it's ridiculous, but never have you seen that represented in a telenovela. Never have you seen the maid be the lead of the story, one of the two leads of the story whose internal issues are driving the plot forward. Never have you seen an LGBTQ romance between two men in a way that is complicated. And not to, like, you know, pat myself on the back too much, but damn, Pat, like, this show is dope. I love this show. We did a really good job with it. And we took this thing that we love and peppered it with our own personal stories and people that we characters that we based off of people in our lives. And like, I'm just really proud of it. I think that's why people are so excited about it, is because they've just never seen themselves represented in this way with an art form that we all love, with characters that they recognize. You know what I mean?
Well, Jasmine, I'm so glad you were able to join me on Hyphenated as a very hyphenated lady yourself. This is what we call a plug. We want the listeners of Hyphenated to take a listen. If you enjoyed our conversation, to take a listen to The Princess of South Beach.
Yes, The Princess of South Beach is available wherever you get your podcasts. The English language cast stars Rachel Zegler, who's going to be in the new West Side Story. Raul Esparza from Law & Order SVU, Danny Pino, who was just in Dear Evan Hansen and is on Mayans, Gina Torres, who's a legend and a goddess, Ex Mayo, like the cast is stacked. They are hilarious. In Spanish, you've got Cheryl Rubio, who's in Casa Las Flores, Richie O'Farrill, Erika de la Vega. I mean, these casts are insane. Please check out the show. We made it with a lot of love. I am so excited for more of the show to start coming out, because I think the characters are getting more and more interesting as it goes along. We're only a third of the way through and we've already had such a positive response. And, you know, we did this as a love letter to the Latino community, and you know, check it out.
Yeah. And it almost killed me and Jasmine. So please take a listen.
It almost killed us. It was over 400 pages of scripts in each language. So please check it out, simply for my sanity.